This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, WGCU's Mike Canary will speak with Professor Karen Jacobson. She's a global migration expert at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University in Massachusetts. They will preview her lecture this coming Friday at FGCU called Migrants and Refugees, a Middle East Perspective. But first, earlier today, a coalition of community partners released the results of the first ever comprehensive survey measuring how Southwest Floridians view our changing climate. The survey found overwhelming support for local action and for finding concrete solutions in response to climate change. And according to the survey findings, Hurricane Irma and recent red tide and toxic algae outbreaks have the majority of Southwest Florida residents deeply concerned about the changing climate. Joining me now to discuss the survey is Jennifer Watson Roberts. She is the director of Path to Positive Communities with Eco America, and that's the national nonprofit that was hired by the Conservancy of Southwest Florida, the Community Foundation of Collier County, and the Southwest Florida Community Foundation to conduct the study. Jennifer, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
It's great to be here.
And I'm also joined on the phone by Yoka Arditi Rocha. She is the executive director of the Clio Institute. It's a Miami-based nonprofit that seeks to educate and promote an informed and engaged public that supports climate action locally, regionally, and nationally, and globally. She'll be in Fort Myers next Monday, February 25th, for the Southwest Florida Community Foundation's next Climate 101 workshop. Yoka, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And as always, we invite you to join our conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Yoka, we're going to get into the efforts that you're putting forward to pass along the most recent science when it comes to climate change and some possible solutions in just a little bit. But first, I want to dig into the results of this survey, which just came out this morning. Jennifer, for starters, tell me a little bit about Eco America and your role with it.
Certainly. Eco America is a national organization that works to build institutional leadership, public support, and political will for climate solutions. And my position is director of the communities program, Path to Positive Communities, which works to do outreach with cities and counties around the country.
Okay. And so you used to be the mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina. When was that?
That's correct. Up until the end of 2017.
Oh, okay. So that's fairly recent. How did that role impact your perspective on climate change? How did working there in Charlotte, how did that put your focus onto the impacts of climate change on communities and cities like Charlotte?
Certainly. Well, Charlotte, as many growing cities, has seen a lot of the impacts from increased flooding, and hurricanes do come inland. We've seen that. Our state has suffered tremendously. Hurricane Florence sat on our coast for days because the Gulf Stream is weakening with the warming seas and the climate, the changing climate, and that the flooding, we still have impacts from that, and the whole state was affected. But I have been working on environmental issues for a long time. Charlotte, for many years, was not in attainment with EPA, and so our air quality was so poor. People with asthma were recognizing that in high ozone days they had to stay inside, impacted our children, our elderly, people in low-income communities, and that the whole aspect of environmental justice has been important to me as well.
That makes sense. But so I'm wondering now about this survey. What is this survey about? How did it come about?
So the Conservancy of Southwest Florida initiated and got the funding from the two community foundations to support it. They have been working, obviously, in this space for years, looking at the mangroves, looking at wildlife, looking at land use and impacts of extreme weather, of pollution, of what's going on to cause the algae blooms. And they got in touch with us. We were doing a national survey at the same time, and we added the Southwest Florida residents. So we're able to compare national results and the local results, but also to be able to do that less expensively and at a crucial time for their work in working on conservation.
Okay, so I got to tell you, I was surprised when I saw these results. 93% agree that local, state, and federal governments should do more to protect mangroves and wetlands. I'm really honestly shocked. Were you surprised by that?
Well, what's surprising in this entire survey is the amount of consensus, because we know there are wide-ranging views on the changing climate. But there's a lot of consensus here. It's consensus on recognizing the harm. When we ask the question about mangroves and wetlands, it's because the buffering they provide to the extreme weather, the floods and the storms. It's also, we know that mangroves are a carbon sink. So
they really do hold a lot of carbon.
They do.
Mangroves are great for that.
Absolutely. And we know that carbon is not good. So we found a lot of surprising consensus. Even on climate solutions, people recognize that wind and solar are much better for the environment, much better for air quality, actually lower cost. So there are a number of things here. Also, the connection between the changing climate and health. Many folks connected that to respiratory illnesses, connected it to their health in general. And we know the businesses as well connect it to economic prosperity because of the impact on tourism, especially when the red tide bloomed. And we read about that in Charlotte. That was something that a lot of people knew about, and it kept people away.
It really did.
Yeah. Air was very toxic.
It was bad for business, too. I'm going to go through these numbers in a rapid fire. 83% agree that more extreme weather and storms threaten the well-being of their community. 78% agree that rising sea levels threaten the well-being of their community. That's 78. That's two less than 80. So 69% say red tide and blue-green algae outbreaks are being made worse by climate change and pollution. 67% say Hurricane Irma has caused them to be more concerned about climate change. Now, I was telling somebody about this earlier today, and I was like, I just want to be clear. This isn't 93% of Democrats. This
Correct.
Is 93% of people surveyed. So, I mean,
absolutely.
That's an interesting point to point out. And so I wanted to have you go over with me a little bit about how the survey was conducted.
Certainly.
Because when somebody sees a survey coming to them from Eco America, people who would be sympathetic towards the environment might be more likely to fill that out. Were you able to maybe disguise that it came from Eco America, or how did you get everybody to respond?
Well, one of our partners was Lake Research Partners, and they do national surveys as well. Both Eco America and Lake Research have very strong national reputations for doing these in a nonpartisan, bipartisan way. We certainly looked at demographics to make sure we were matching what the community has in terms of age, party affiliation, et cetera. Our respondents matched what those local demographics are.
Okay, so you made sure the Democrat Republican ratio and everything, because a lot of
Absolutely.
It's been politicized. Do you feel like we may have turned a corner politically to where we can be unified and understand that the environment is being threatened by climate change?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the big supporters of these results and of taking action is Congressman Rooney, who represents much of this area. And he has actually gotten this briefing on our survey results. And he has worked with, you know, your new governor in helping create that Office of Resiliency. So we absolutely believe that it is a bipartisan issue, that Republican attitudes are changing as well. We know that Democrats have supported climate solutions for longer, but I believe that what we know from the statistics that is narrowing, that gap is narrowing. And this consensus, you're absolutely right. There are quite a few conservatives, quite a few Republicans in the area, and the consensus is that their health is being harmed, the government has a responsibility. Clean air and clean water are a right. Those are some of the values that came out of this survey. And the number of people who've actually personally already taken action, like getting more energy efficient homes, buying hybrid cars, these things are already happening here in Southwest Florida.
People are already doing their individual thing to try to be part of the solution. Do
Absolutely.
You feel like it was Hurricane Irma and the blue-green algae red tide outbreak that kind of got people over the hump?
Absolutely. And the survey results show that 67% said that the Hurricane Irma caused them to be more concerned. And we know that 71% are concerned. So that was absolutely a turning point. There's a sense, especially folks who've been here a while, they know these storms are happening more frequently. They know that they're stronger, the winds are higher, the amount of rainfall is growing. That's happening all around Florida. It's happening on the coast of North Carolina and South Carolina. We are seeing this awareness continue to grow. What's also interesting is that, you know, we did the national survey along with this. We saw that Southwest Florida residents are more likely than the national average to get guidance and to contact their local officials and their federal officials. And that's they're a very educated community. Also, a lot of retirees have more time to be engaged and involved, but they're actually doing that. And
so we have activists here. We have a lot of activists. It's good. It's interesting to know. I didn't
people
know
who care.
Yeah. Well, and I was interested in the comparison between Southwest Florida versus National. And one of the figures was 67% claim to be affected by more damage and harm from extreme weather like storms, hurricanes, and tornadoes. Nationally, that number was 49%. Because we have a front row seat to the hurricanes, I would imagine that could dictate us having more of an awareness and feeling like we're impacted a little bit more. But otherwise, how did Southwest Florida compare to the rest of the country?
So as you mentioned, there are a few areas where clearly Southwest Florida feels the damage and the impacts to a greater extent than the national community. There are some other things, like I mentioned, the officials that they listen to. The other interesting consensus was, you know, we asked, who do you trust when you're getting your information, who are information sources? Scientists. Three-quarters of the folks here trust science as an information source.
That's great because we have tons of them on our show.
So absolutely.
I feel like I've talked to scientists more than anybody else in the last year, especially with the algae outbreak. So that's that must be encouraging to someone in a position like yours, right?
Absolutely. And again, that folks are more likely to feel compelled to talk to their officials. It was a higher amount here than the rest of the country. So clearly, folks are paying attention. They are ready for climate solutions. They're ready to learn more about it. So many of them have taken personal action, and they're seeing the connections, especially, you know, around issues like health. And, you know, I always tell folks, it's a win-win situation. If you know that carbon is really bad for the atmosphere, it's bad to breathe, it's bad for the changing climate, then walking and biking make a lot of sense. It's also good for your health. So, you know, even for those folks who are kind of skeptical, they're going to be helping themselves anyway. And we saw in this survey that more people are turning to walking and biking and buying electric vehicles. So there are things that everybody can do.
They're doing a lot more of planning communities that are mixed use in the area, too, because they're trying to keep things as local as they can. If you're just joining the show today, I'm talking with Jennifer Watson-Roberts. She's the director of Path to Positive Communities with Eco America. It's the organization that conducted a new survey on attitudes toward climate change that we're exploring today. And I'm also talking on the phone with Yoka Artiti Rocha. She is the executive director of the Clio Institute in Miami. She'll be in Southwest Florida next Monday, February 25th. She's going to be presenting a Climate Change 101 workshop at the Southwest Florida Community Foundation's Collaboratory in downtown Fort Myers. If you have a question or a comment, you can give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Yoka, thank you so much for your patience. We talked a little bit about solutions. Is this what you're going to be presenting, some personal solutions or awareness at Climate Change 101?
Absolutely. We always focus on solutions because there are many. But the training is a 45 to 50 minute in-depth training that goes over the latest scientific data on climate and the urgency to take action. And, of course, the most important thing, what can we do about it? And we are coming back to Fort Myers for the second time. The first time was in January. We're going to be there on Monday and, again, back in March. And we are a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that has a great expert science-based advisory that focus on climate-based education. Our mission is to really build climate literacy, and we've been doing it in South Florida for the last 10 years.
Well, so when you hear these results, do you feel like you're kind of getting your job done?
Absolutely, and I was excited to see the results of the survey this morning because they are aligned with what we're seeing at the community level. I mean, we are all frontline communities here in Florida. We are ground zero for climate change impacts, and Floridians have been already feeling the effects of a warming world, from mosquitoes to extreme weather events like hurricanes and heat waves to the devastating harmful algal blooms and rising seas. We have them all. And the good news is that local institutions and organizations are really leading the way. And I was happy to listen to Jennifer's statement about how the gap is narrowing. And I have to say that Florida is leading the way in really closing that partisan gap. And we're excited about that.
So, Yoka, tell me the truth, though. Were you shocked when you saw some of these results?
I was, some of them, but for the other ones, I mean, Mother Nature has been sending really loud signals, and I think people are taking notice, and it makes sense. It just makes sense. Embracing clean energy doesn't pollute our air, that doesn't pollute our water, that it's good for our health. It just makes sense. We are the Sunshine State. We need to be really stepping up and living up to our name. So embracing clean, renewable energy is definitely a must. And we're seeing it already spreading out all across the state. So we are encouraged by that.
So I'm going to ask then, now that we know and we kind of seem to be able to say out loud that climate change is a real thing, it's I'm wondering then, once you have people in acceptance, what then do you direct people or ask people to do in order to contribute to solutions?
I mean, absolutely.
Because it seems like such a big thing. I mean, climate change is huge. It's the whole world. And here I am with my little patch of lawn in my house. How am I going to make a dent? And what do you encourage people to do?
Well, I think everybody can do little, or they can do as much as they want. I think one of the things that the survey showed us is that Southwest Floridians are very much inclined to reach out to their elected officials, and that's something that we can all do. We can all use our voice. The other thing that we could all do is use the power of our purse. Our purchasing habits, our consumption habits are crucial. And then, obviously, you know, we need to be engaged citizens and at a local, state, and federal level. We can start by reducing our carbon footprint, and we talked about how biking and walking, obviously, it's not only good for the environment, but it's also good for our health. And, again, we can all be doing so much from, you know, looking at ways that we can be more energy efficient, to reducing our even plastic consumption, because plastic is made out of fossil fuels. If walking and biking is not an option, maybe going through a hybrid electric vehicle. Additionally, another thing that we don't talk about much in the environmental community is reducing our own food waste. Reducing food waste in our own homes is a huge climate solution. And has been identified as one of the top biggest solutions that we can all embrace at a very low cost. So, again, there are many things that we can do, and we really go into in-depth in our training, and there are a lot more information about that on our website if your listeners are interested in learning more about it.
I'm sorry, Jennifer, what were you going to say?
I just wanted to add that the other thing, this clearly points to both the work of the Clio Institute but also of the survey, is that people can be advocates with their elected officials. And as a former elected official, I know how important it is to hear from your constituents. We're going to support if you pass, you know, this is one of these 75% favor a proposal to reduce climate pollution by passing laws for efficient buildings and cars. That was kind of surprising because that's government intervention, right? That's government regulation. But people are hungry for that because they know that if we get more electric vehicles on the road, if we get rid of those polluting diesel buses, et cetera, that it's going to be better for everybody and better for the climate. So I'm hopeful. Thank you for helping publicize this because I'm hopeful that elected officials, whether they're county, city, or federal, are going to hear this and say, okay, let's talk about how can we do something in the built environment? How can we do something in regulation that's going to help everybody?
Well, and that kind of takes us to a comment that we just got on Twitter from Captain Carl. He says, quote, Jim Beaver of Regional Planning Commission says that sea level rise is 3 millimeters a year. Cape Coral will be covered in 200 years. That's just three generations of families. Then the question that person then asks is, why is development raging on unabated in Southwest Florida, and what preparation is being done by the cities? So how does development factor into some of these questions, and then also talking to your local elected officials?
Well, in development, that's such a great point because, you know, even in Charlotte, we've seen increased flooding because of the overdevelopment, all the asphalt, all the increased stormwater and the challenges there. And the community needs the support. How are we going to change our zoning laws? How are we going to change our building codes to make sure that we are developing in a sustainable way? And it's a very tough balance. Again, those elected officials need that support from the community saying, you know what, we don't want as much as possible. We want to make sure we're doing it in a sustainable way, in a way that is not going to harm future generations and is going to help us control this increasing harm that we're seeing from our changing climate.
I wonder if survey results... Sorry?
Oh, I was just going to add something, if I may. Another way that I think we can help constituents and residents to speak up about this daunting issue, because we understand how complex it can be. One of the things we offer at the CLIO Institute is to participate at a CLIO Speakers Network, where we actually train average citizens to become climate speakers and be able to have the tools and the resources needed and obviously the education needed to have these conversations. And we're going to be offering one in Fort Myers in March 20th. So that's another opportunity for residents to become even more engaged.
That is really a good point to bring up, because you go to these meetings and these people have attorneys, they know all the land use laws and what the different landowner rights are and things, and it feels like a David and Goliath fight when you're average Joe going up saying, hey, wait, we need to slow down some of this development because it's not good for the environment. Having the education and background and having talking points in front of you might better prepare a person to go to a planning commission meeting, for example, or a Conservation 2020 meeting and be able to have something to say that doesn't get shut down by the first statement by an attorney.
Correct. And having data and metrics like the one that we just got from this survey are certainly wonderful additions to that particular conversation, because this is hardcore metrics that we can, you know, bring to these conversations to show, you know, our people really want this. Really want action from our local government. People are really worried. So this is definitely a wonderful tool that we could all use.
Yeah, and there are sometimes surprising intersectional benefits. So we've seen that, for example, when you're looking at multifamily housing, if you reduce the amount of parking required, you reduce the amount of land you have to use, you reduce the cost per unit, so you're helping affordable housing. And when you reduce the parking, you are driving people into things like walking, biking, and public transit. So there are some things that actually help the environment and the climate that also help things like equitable housing and housing opportunity and workforce opportunity and your zoning and planning.
Mm-hmm. And Jennifer, I'm wondering if you think, as someone who's been an elected official, a survey like this, can this move the needle with an elected official who is elected with a certain party that had a certain viewpoint, and then they see, oh, wait, 93% of people, and there's a consensus among everyone that I'm representing that says, yeah, they'd like to see, for example, 89% favoring a proposal to reduce climate change pollution by modernizing America's electric grid. 82% favor a proposal to reduce climate change by pollution by charging corporate polluters a fee for the pollution they create. 81% favor a proposal to reduce climate change pollution by expanding public transportation like buses and trains. 80% favor a proposal to reduce climate change pollution by providing corporate tax credits to expand clean energy. That's 80%. 75%, you cited this earlier, favor a proposal to reduce climate change pollution by passing laws for more efficient buildings and cars, and favor a proposal to reduce climate change pollution by providing personal tax credits for electric or hybrid cars. So there is support for that. When you see numbers like that as an elected official, would that encourage someone maybe to, I don't want to say break ranks, but be a little bit more gutsy with coming up with some proposals?
Absolutely. And I have seen that happen. When you know that your constituents are hold certain values and beliefs, what you can do is you start to test the water. And so you go to your first forum and you say, you know, we're thinking about passing some laws to make buildings more efficient. And you feel the reaction in the crowd. You see if you get any emails. And then you can take another step forward. And absolutely, this is going to be a foundation that is going to help those officials start to test the waters and start to recognize that there is consensus here. And it's Republicans and Democrats. You know, we know those appeared in the survey relative to the proportion they are here in Southwest Florida. And this is something that EcoAmerica has been seeing around the country, that gap is narrowing. As the impacts are more widely felt, as that they are seen, as that connection is made through the continued education by scientists and by universities, and that is something that we do hope is going to give many politicians the courage and the support to move forward.
We have a call coming in from Paul in Punta Gorda. Paul, what would you like to add to the conversation? Paul, are you there? Sorry, I hit the wrong button. That was my fault.
You there?
Yeah, you're with us.
Hello. Okay. Climate change, at the very best, sometimes looks targeted to the overall population. agenda-driven. I agree with a lot of it, but the people in Southwest Florida that responded to that, those are all pretty much obvious, favorable votes. There's other things, though, in Southwest Florida that we have a more immediate need for. And I started a group called PREACH, the Peace River Charlotte Harbor Environmental Awareness Group, and we're fighting phosphate that's trying to move down the Peace River Valley that started way up in Polk County, Hardy, and now they're trying to get into DeSoto. And we intentionally told people we don't want to make this a climate issue because we have a more immediate issue. The gentleman that said that Cape Coral would be underwater in 200 years, Cape Coral won't be here in 200 years if we don't do something about phosphate. All issues in Southwest Florida are phosphate mining, sugar, and red tide, and Lake Okeechobee. And those are, we talk about government regulations. They've failed us horribly. Our water authorities, this has gone on, and the outflow of all this stuff coming out of if this is one big drain field for the phosphate industry, Central Florida, coming down our rivers, creeks, and empties out. Sure, we've always had red tide. We've never had red tide like this. I'm a captain for 37 years. I've never seen dolphin die from red tide. I've never seen this many sea turtles, manatees, and then the whale shark that came up in
that whale shark was a shocker.
Sanibel.
So
that's what I'm saying. I applaud you. I mean, anybody that's doing something for the environment, but there's a lot of groups that sprung up down here, just recently for this phosphate thing that started in July, and we're hammering people with social media, and we're making them more aware. And we found out that 80% of the people don't really know about phosphate mining. Right. And, sugar was kind of the smokescreen for phosphate, and they've expanded all over. Manatee, they're trying to come down to DeSoto. So it's a kind of an ongoing thing. I witnessed the 1967 and 71 phosphate spills in the Peace River as a kid, and I'll never forget that. I mean, it killed 90% of the fish in the 110-mile Peace River. That's very significant. I'm not making that up. That's a
historical fact. That actually happened.
Yes, it actually happened. So,
thanks a lot for your comments, and I really appreciate you bringing phosphate mining. And I think we're going to have to do a show about phosphates coming up here fairly soon. Thank you so much, Paul, for reminding me to get that booked and talked about. Sometimes you get climate change, which is the big umbrella, but then there's a lot of little things underneath it and that are contributing or exacerbating things.
Absolutely. And what I want to tell Paul and all the folks listening who are working with various environmental organizations, with university organizations, with all the things that you're doing individually, they are all connected. And one of the great things that we see is that all the great work you're doing on phosphates and awareness there, that's helping all of us. All the work that we're going to continue to do on helping people be aware of the connection between what they're doing individually, collectively, and advocating for, between that and the more extreme weather, all those connections are helping. And you're absolutely right that the warming oceans are part of the algae blooms, but it's also the fertilizer and what's going into the water. But we see these values here support what you're doing. Clean water and clean air, everyone can agree on. That's something we need.
Yeah, that's a consensus that is borne out by the numbers. And Yoka, before we run out of time, I'd like for you to remind us of the details on the Climate 101 workshop. People have to RSVP for this?
Absolutely. They need to call the Southwest Florida Community Foundation, and it's on this coming Monday, the 25th at 2 p.m. at the Collaboratory on 2031 Jackson Street, I believe. So they can just RSVP by calling the foundation, and it's free of charge, and it's about an hour. So we're hoping to have a greater participation than the last time. The last time we had about 80 people attend. And the results after the training were very positive. We usually also do surveys just to kind of gauge the level of understanding after going through the training. And everybody agreed and strongly agreed that they felt empowered to do something about this issue at a personal level. And the other major finding that we found was that health is one of the number one concerns regarding to changing climate.
And then the next one, if people can't make it to the one on Monday at 2 o'clock, the next one's March 15th at 10 a.m., correct?
Correct.
All right.
And our Speakers Network starts on March 20th at 2 p.m.
The Speakers Network, so you can get yourself trained to go up in front of the county board or whoever you're going to talk to. That's such a great idea to arm people with some information and ability to get up in front of a group and make their case. So,
and to do it in an effective and efficient way.
Yeah, instead of just sitting there with your hair on fire screaming, but you don't, you just want to really, because you're so passionate, but then having the, you know, the rebuttal ready, because, you know, there are other people on the other side are going to be prepared. So that's really interesting. I think that that's a good idea. I wanted to ask Jennifer real quick before we totally run out of time. Do you have any final thoughts you want to share?
Final thoughts are that there is a consensus that is growing. Southwest Florida, as we mentioned, is on the front line of the impacts of climate change with the warming ocean, sea level rise, severity of weather, increasing flooding. But the whole country, the whole world needs to have folks who are aware and are advocates and realize they can take personal responsibility. They can advocate with elected officials that we can change. Scientists tell us that there is a way to reverse climate change. It's going to take all of us, even, you know, people planting trees. I mean, so many things that can help. And the more we can do to help educate folks, thank you so much for having this program, the better we're all going to be.
Well, that is all the time that we have for this part of the show. I want to thank my guest, Jennifer Watson Roberts. She's the director of Path to Positive Communities with Eco America. Jennifer, thanks so much for coming in today. I really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure.
I also want to thank Yoka Arditi Rocha. She is the executive director of the Clio Institute. Yoka, thanks so much for your time, too.
Thank you, Julie.
When we return, WGC's Mike and Ira will be joined by a professor from Tufts University in Massachusetts to get a preview of her upcoming talk at FGCU called Migrants and Refugees, a Middle East Perspective. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.